this exploration, we will question the assumption that conflict and exploitation are mere anomalies in the global order. Instead, we will examine whether they are logical outcomes of the incentives embedded within our economic systems, driven by fiat currency and endless money printing. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We've got a fantastic one today. We're actually jumping back into another piece by Peter England. I will have the link to the last one we did by him in the show notes. Really great piece. And I really love this one because he does such a good job at breaking down the economic step-by-step process, and also just specifically comparing it to an economic phenomenon that we know very well, the trilemma of state monetary control. Like, what is the problem between, or what are those conflicts? Kind of like the whole issue of, you know, you can't get fast, cheap, and high quality. You know, pick two. Well, there's this same, very similar type of dilemma or trilemma happening with monetary regimes and how countries deal with growth and an inflationary fiat system where money is literally created as debt and what the consequences of those things are. And that there's actually a rational incentive structure that leads to exploitation of foreign countries, explicit military dominance, and conflict between nations that otherwise have no reason to be in conflict. It creates a zero-sum game where the economic system itself is supposed to be a positive-sum game. Like, it's just perfectly natural that you and another person collaborating and cooperating together to accomplish things is many, many multiples more valuable. It is a far better investment and better state of being than being in conflict. And yet, what if our monetary system, what if the way the fiat system works, it actually forces nation states to stay in a state of conflict? And even more importantly, what if Bitcoin fixes it? I actually encourage you to listen to this a couple of times. If you really want to get that, this is a really good breakdown, I think, of a really critical idea. And this would be a really good one to internalize if you had the time. So that's just a suggestion from me to you. Quick shout out to the Jade Plus hardware wallet. I actually just got mine. I'm going to be posting a video of setting it up and starting to use it. But I've always been a huge fan of the Jade, and I am super stoked about the Jade Plus. And my code GUY, G-U-Y, gets you 10% off. Sorry I didn't have that detail in the last episode. But the link and code is in the show notes. Make sure you get that discount. And also, if you're on Fold, you can get a gift card for Blockstream, which is 10% sats back. I'm just saying. Then check out BitKit, the BitKit wallet. Huge fan of everything they're building over at Synonym. And they are supporting the show as well. And that's just, I'm hugely grateful for that. And I've been following very closely what they're building for a long time now. And if you want a non-custodial wallet that just works, that has Bitcoin, that has on-chain and Lightning, if you haven't tried out the BitKit wallet, you need to take a minute and do it. It is a really good wallet. Links and details to all of that will be in the show notes. So with that, let's get into today's article. And it's titled, Island Economics: Why Exploitation and Perpetual Wars Are Rational Under Fiat. Exploring the mechanics behind an economic world order that fuels endless cycles of war, conflict, and control. By Peter England. At first glance, it might seem that human atrocities stem from impulses of greed, power hunger, or an inherent failure to collaborate. Yet if we take a closer look at the systems that underpin the current world economy, a disturbing pattern emerges. Exploitation and war may not only be inevitable, but in fact rational responses to the structures in place. In this exploration, we will question the assumption that conflict and exploitation are mere anomalies in the global order. Instead, we will examine whether they are logical outcomes of the incentives embedded within our economic systems, driven by fiat currency and endless money printing. Could a decentralized, incorruptible form of money restore those incentives, or are we destined to perpetuate the same cycles of violence and domination forever? The Impossible Trinity, also known as the Trilemma of International Finance, is a concept in international economics which demonstrates that it is impossible for a nation to simultaneously achieve the following three objectives. 1. Free capital flows, or absence of capital controls. This means allowing capital to move freely in and out of the nation without restrictions, seeking the best investment opportunities globally. Why is this desirable? Free capital flows encourage the global exchange of ideas and innovation, fostering collaboration across borders. It allows nations to specialize and share resources. In an equitable world, people are free to exchange value with whomever they want, without interference or capital restrictions. 2. Fixed exchange rate, or no exchange rate at all. In traditional systems, this is where a nation pegs its currency to another at a fixed rate, making currency conversion constant and as easy as converting centimeters to inches. The gold standard once provided a global fixed exchange rate by pegging currencies to gold. Today, Bitcoin can serve a similar function. Why is this desirable? A fixed exchange rate, or no exchange rate at all, through a common currency, eliminates currency competition on the global stage and allows ideas to compete purely on merit. With everyone in the same boat, nations are less likely to engage in currency wars or exploitation of one another, making collaboration the preferred strategy. In an equitable world, the nation you are born in shouldn't determine the merit and value of your ideas globally. And 3. Independent monetary policy. Centralized base layer economy. This refers to a nation's ability to control its domestic economy by setting interest rates and printing money to finance spending, control inflation, or influence employment. Why is this desirable? Nations prefer independent monetary policy to isolate their economies from external shocks and maintain domestic stability. However, the reality is independent monetary control inevitably leads to chronic inflation. To preserve stability at home, they must export chaos to other nations. An independent monetary policy is fundamentally at odds with an equitable world, serving as the primary mechanism by which prosperity in one place can be achieved at the expense of it elsewhere. It dictates who can exchange value with whom, ensuring that where you are born ultimately determines your chances of a prosperous life. You don't need a PhD in economics to understand these concepts. A simple C in common sense will do just fine. In the section below, we will explore how various combinations of the three objectives, 2 out of 3, shape a nation-state's actions and interactions with the global economy. The points I make here are not to be viewed as definitive conclusions. They are simplifications, but rather illustrative explorations of how different combinations of economic policies might influence societal dynamics, both domestically and globally. The purpose is to highlight the rationale behind each set of conditions, offering a framework for deeper understanding and discussion. Controlling entities often have a tendency and incentive to make global economics seem overly complicated, discouraging engagement and leaving the decisions in the hands of the so-called experts. But you don't need a PhD in economics to understand these concepts. A simple C in common sense will do just fine. Once you grasp the point being made, you'll realize that as long as independent monetary control is possible, the only rational course of action for a nation or its allies is to maintain control over it and do what they can to protect their own currency. Without this, they risk being exploited by adversaries who would otherwise take advantage of their vulnerability. However, in a reality where monetary control wasn't possible, where an incorruptible form of money existed that transcended all others, it would be up to each person to determine whether we as a species stand more to gain from cooperation and fair competition versus sabotaging for one another. Type A. Free capital flows plus independent monetary policy equals loss of fixed exchange rate. Scenario: a nation allows free capital movement and wishes to retain control over its own monetary policy, for example, setting interest rates and printing more money. Why a fixed exchange rate is lost. With free capital flows, interest rate changes in the domestic economy lead to capital flows that influence the exchange rate. For example, if a nation lowers interest rates to stimulate economic growth, it may lead to capital outflows as investors seek higher returns elsewhere. This outflow increases the supply of the domestic currency in the foreign exchange market, causing the currency to depreciate. Conversely, if the nation raises interest rates to control inflation, it attracts foreign investment, which increases the demand for domestic currency, causing it to appreciate. In such a system, the exchange rate becomes highly sensitive to domestic monetary policy. As a result, the exchange rate cannot remain fixed because any attempt to maintain a fixed rate would require the central bank to abandon its monetary policy objectives. Therefore, the nation must allow its currency to float, letting the exchange rate adjust on the foreign exchange market. Domestic consequences. Independent monetary policy leads to chronic inflation, as the temptation to print money for short-term relief is irresistible and key to winning elections, despite the long-term economic damage. Inflation encourages consumption over saving, exacerbating economic disparities within the nation and causing misallocation of capital, leading to more money printing. All economic activities are effectively derivatives of the centralized local currency, giving the government disproportionate control over citizens' and companies' financial fates. Free market principles are often preached, but the market is not free. Low taxes and minimal regulations translates into monopolistic trends, which undermine the very free market ideals being promoted. Concentrating power in the hands of a few large entities. The elite often do not abide by the same taxes and regulations, frequently moving their capital abroad to tax havens, thereby avoiding the very restrictions they impose on others. Financial institutions, whether governmental or private, are at the center of the economy. They act as gatekeepers of capital flow, determining who has access to resources. Over time, trust in institutions erodes as the wealth gap widens, benefiting an elite. This increasing mistrust gives rise to populist movements as people feel disconnected from a system that they believe no longer serves their interests. Global consequences. Nations will pursue foreign policies focused on global dominance to ensure the local currency's strength on the world stage. As inflationary pressures rise domestically, these nations use various methods to export inflation, imposing their financial burdens onto weaker economies. Powerful nations use military strength and economic coercion, for example, loans and debt traps, to exploit poorer nations, resulting in neocolonialism and conflicts. The relentless pursuit of growth caused by chronic inflation leads to environmental degradation, driving the over-extraction of natural resources, all in the name of short-term economic gains. Reward mechanism. Success is largely determined by one's proximity to the money-printing machine. Those closest to it, banks, large corporations, speculators, lobbyists, corrupt politicians reap large benefits. Those who excel often exploit the monetary system, both domestically and internationally. Sustainable practices and long-term thinking are devalued, creating a system that sidelines those striving for genuine progress in favor of those who embrace short-termism and quick profits. Winners: assertive nations. Successful nations will have assertive foreign policy with emphasis on global dominance to ensure the local currency's strength relative to others. Losers: vulnerable nations. Vulnerable nations yet again often fall prey to exploitation, with their natural resources depleted and sovereignty eroded, leading to dependence on protectionistic nations and perpetuating cycles of poverty. Examples: the USA, Germany, France, Great Britain, parenthesis Sweden, most of the global West. Fate: ultimately, this system culminates in civil unrest or even global conflict, typically occurring every 150 to 200 years. Such conflicts bring about immense suffering and death, leading to a catastrophic reset of the global order. Type B: fixed exchange rate plus independent monetary policy leads to loss of free capital flows. Scenario: a nation fixes its exchange rate and wishes to maintain control over its own interest rates and monetary policy. Why free capital flows are lost. If a nation tries to keep its exchange rate fixed while also setting its own interest rates, discrepancies between domestic and foreign interest rates will arise. For example, if the nation lowers its interest rates to stimulate the economy, lower returns might lead to capital outflows. This outflow of capital would put downward pressure on the domestic currency, threatening the fixed exchange rate. Conversely, raising interest rates to combat inflation could attract foreign capital, putting upward pressure on the currency. To maintain the fixed exchange rate, the nation would have to control capital flows, either by restricting or taxing capital movements, thereby limiting free capital flows. Without these controls, the fixed exchange rate would collapse under the pressure of large capital flows. Domestic consequences: independent monetary policy leads to chronic inflation, driven by the government's overconfidence in central planning. This causes misallocation of resources, which results in inflationary pressure. Inflation encourages consumption over saving, worsening economic inequality and leading to poor capital allocation decisions. This misallocation further drives the government to print more money, perpetuating a similar cycle of inflation as for type A. Strict capital controls create a surveillance and a protectionist society, restricting both immigration and immigration, which stifles individual freedom and mobility. This further limits innovation as it discourages openness and the free exchange of ideas. The elite often do not abide by the same capital restrictions, frequently moving their capital abroad to tax havens, thereby avoiding the very restrictions they oppose on others. Over time, as inflation grows, central planning becomes more rigid, with the government doubling down on exerting control over economic activities, which further violates individual freedom and mobility. The government and state-owned companies are at the center of the economy. They act as gatekeepers, determining who has access to resources. The widening economic divide creates social and financial instability, making long-term prosperity dependent on exporting inflation for internal stability. Global consequences: the nation will take an isolationist stance with limited global engagement to restrict capital flows in and out of the nation. As inflationary pressures rise domestically, the nation is eventually forced into the global scene to sustain its economic system, using various methods, for example loans and debt traps, to export inflation onto weaker economies. Tensions on the world stage over resources and dominance are likely to escalate into confrontations and conflicts as nations compete to secure their economic and geopolitical interests. powerful nations use military strength and economic coercion, for example loans and debt traps, to exploit poorer nations, resulting in neocolonialism and conflicts. The relentless pursuit of growth caused by chronic inflation leads to environmental degradation, driving the over-extraction of natural resources, all in the name of short-term economic gains. Reward mechanism. The system rewards loyalty to the state, creating a rigid social hierarchy where compliance is essential for survival and advancement. Nepotism and corruption thrive, as the state centralizes power and discourages dissent, eventually leading to an oligarchic structure where a small elite controls both economic and political outcomes. Liberal values are devalued, creating a system that sidelines diversity of thought and ideas. Winners: protectionistic nations. Successful nations exercise strict control over companies and citizens, with focus on capital flow restrictions. However, as domestic inflation pressures mount, they must look abroad to fuel expansion. Losers: vulnerable nations. Vulnerable nations yet again often fall prey to exploitation, with their natural resources depleted and sovereignty eroded, leading to dependence on protectionistic nations and perpetuating cycles of poverty. Examples: China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Iran. Fate. War becomes inevitable, as inflation dictates the nation must grow at any cost to survive, leading to cycles of conflict roughly every 150 to 200 years. The result is devastating: global warfare, widespread suffering, and mass death. The constant battle of world domination. In reality, nations with independent control over their monetary policies don't fall perfectly into Type A or Type B. Instead, their respective economic priorities often lie on a spectrum between the two. Nations leaning toward Type A focus on expanding their global influence. They often impose dominance over other nations' economies to maintain the strength of their currency, using aggressive foreign policy and financial exploitation as tools to achieve this. In contrast, nations closer to Type B take a more isolationist approach. This typically involves a highly centralized government exerting tight control over capital movement and closely monitoring the population. However, eventually, even these nations will be forced to look outward for resources and growth. The hierarchical layer map of Type A and Type B nation-states consists of Layer 0, natural laws, or the ethical. Layer 1, above that, government-backed fiat money, which is necessarily centralized. While Layer 2 and higher contain various centralized entities. Despite their policy differences and ideological stances, both systems prioritize independent monetary policy, which entails a centralized economic base layer, and inevitably lead to chronic inflation, fueling a relentless pursuit of growth at any cost. The less these consequences are felt domestically, the more they are felt abroad by others. This is why individuals living in the richest liberal democracies may struggle to fully identify with the picture I have painted above. It's because their access to affordable goods, and more critically, ideals such as peace and stability, comes at the expense of exploited workers and war in distant regions abroad. As Type A and Type B nations compete for global dominance, they perpetuate cycles of exploitation and conflict, highlighting the unsustainable nature of their economic models. We will refer to them as promoting island economics, as they both share the characteristic of being inherently exploitive and focused on self-preservation. Type C: free capital flow plus fixed exchange rate using Bitcoin equals loss of independent monetary policy. Scenario: A nation allows free capital flows and has a fixed exchange rate to other currencies through a common currency, Bitcoin. Today, some nations peg their currencies to the US dollar or euro to maintain a fixed exchange rate with these dominant reserve currencies. While this technically places them in Type C, their monetary policies remain controlled by the currency they are pegged to, effectively leaving monetary control in the hands of someone else, which means chronic inflation. In contrast, Bitcoin's decentralized nature means no single entity controls it, making it immune to inflation and manipulation. Additionally, free capital flows are built into it, as transactions are permissionless. The result, as we will delve into, is global money and local freedom. Why independent monetary policy is lost, which is the point. When capital can move freely across borders, investors seek the highest returns. If a nation tries to maintain a fixed exchange rate while setting its own independent interest rates, for example, lowering them to stimulate the economy, capital will flow out of the country in search of better returns, putting downward pressure on the currency. To maintain the fixed exchange rate, central banks traditionally intervene by selling foreign reserves to prop up their currency. But this is unsustainable. Alternatively, they raise interest rates to prevent capital outflow, but this means taking control over domestic monetary policy. In a Bitcoin-based system, however, none of this is even remotely possible. Bitcoin's global and decentralized nature removes the need for pegging and ability to manage interests as it exists beyond the control of any single nation. The decision to embrace Bitcoin means accepting the loss of independent monetary policy and the constraints of a traditional central banking system, which is precisely the point. The main advantage is avoiding the destructive consequences of inflation. Domestic consequences. In a Bitcoin standard economy, independent monetary policy is lost, as interest rates are tied to global markets rather than domestic control. The ability to print money or manipulate the currency is eliminated. No monetary inflation occurs, so the economy becomes aligned with natural principles, promoting sustainability over short-term gains. Central entities that exist atop the decentralized base layer function as spontaneous orders, meaning they are fully accountable for their actions, including governments. Governments win elections by creating optimal conditions for success, such as upholding the rule of law, common values, and developing infrastructure. With money printing eliminated, governments are forced to stay on budget and incentivized to focus on realistic long-term strategies that ensure prosperity rather than short-term fixes. Political lobbying moves from the heart of politics to a peripheral role, as there is little to manipulate. As a result, political offices transform into truly serving the people. Global consequences. Nations with free capital flows and a fixed exchange rate using Bitcoin experience open access to global markets, enabling seamless capital movement without the reliance of intermediaries or centralized control. Conflict becomes less likely, as there is reduced economic incentive for war when local currencies can no longer fluctuate against each other. Without the ability to print money to fund conflicts, nations are compelled to prioritize diplomacy and global cooperation. Without the ability to create money out of thin air, governments must secure the consent of their citizens to finance wars, relying entirely on tax revenue. Human capital is recognized as the ultimate resource. The most successful nations are those that create environments fostering innovation, collaboration, and diversity of thought, driving long-term progress and societal well-being. Reward mechanism. In this system, success is defined by creating true value and trading it with others, eliminating incentives for political manipulation and corruption. Those who rise to influence do so based on their ability to provide value, favoring individuals with visionary ideas and the capacity to realize them. Speculation and short-term thinking shift to the periphery of the economy, while sustainability and long-term success take center stage. Bitcoin provides a form of global money that ensures local freedom by promoting sovereignty and independence to actors. It guarantees financial inclusion without placing individuals or communities at the mercy of governments or superpower nations. This is not a call for globalism through centralization, but a system where localism thrives while at the same time encouraging a decentralized global network to emerge organically from that. Mutually beneficial. With a fixed exchange rate and free capital flows, which Bitcoin offers, the global economy transcends the zero-sum mentality of island economics. With money that cannot be corrupted, the only way to earn it is by creating something of genuine value and exchanging it with others. Layer 0, the natural ethical laws. Layer 1, sound money, Bitcoin, is decentralized and incorruptible. Layer 2 and higher include various centralized entities, including governments, companies, families, etc. Examples. Many societies have benefited from sound money characteristics through gold, but its use was limited by seizure risks and difficulties in handling. For the first time, we have sound money in the form of a digital open protocol, Bitcoin, which is immune to inflation, incorruptible, immutable, and allows for free capital movement without third-party reliance. While challenges like cultural differences, natural disasters, and unforeseen events will continue, the monetary system itself remains incorruptible. This guarantees that even at its lowest possible degradation, equal opportunity for all is upheld. Such a system has the potential to endure indefinitely. The light bulb moment. Once you understand and fully internalize the impossible trinity of international finance, you begin to realize that the first two types are merely different ways of imposing a zero-sum game mentality on global economics, aka island economics. We can debate endlessly about which of these two approaches aligns more closely with the values of liberty, equal opportunity, peace, and free market. But in truth, any claim to those values under the respective approaches can ultimately only endure if those same values are compromised and then completely stripped from others elsewhere. As long as the monetary system is susceptible to corruption, it inevitably will lead to one of these two outcomes. They are yet another example of why infinite money leads to a finite world, a world in which we are programmed to fight over resources. The fundamental difference with this third system is that it builds the world economy on a decentralized economic base layer, one that no single entity or superpower can control to impose its will on others, regardless of the resources they allocate to do so. This system offers nations and people, especially those with rich natural resources who have historically been exploited, an inherent right to their own futures, an unprecedented development in history. This idea represents a monumental shift in how we approach global finance, power, and conflict. Imagine a world where people collectively decide not to fund wars, not through protest or legislation, but through an economic system that makes it not only impossible, but irrational to do so. As warmongering governments continue to fund their destructive agendas through endless money printing, they will only hasten the rise of the better alternative. Under this new paradigm, money, which has always been a tool for control and exploitation, could now become a tool for freedom and peace. This isn't just about stopping war. It's about creating a world where exploitation for profit becomes irrational. The powerful incentive structures that have driven resource extraction, environmental degradation, and human exploitation will lose their foundation. In this new paradigm, cooperation and long-term thinking become the only rational paths forward. While some may initially believe that wealthier nations could suffer under this model, this view is rooted in outdated fiat thinking. In reality, this system is designed for mutual benefit, with competition driven by the aim to provide the most value to the most people, rather than by the pursuit of personal gain and self-preservation. It's crucial to understand that this system won't magically eliminate oppression, authoritarianism, or conflict overnight, but it will provide everyone, including the oppressed, with undeniable rights that over time will see sustainability prevail over unsustainability. This isn't so much about reinventing the global economy as it is about restoring it to its original purpose. Prosperity achieved, not at the expense of others, but through fair competition and mutual collaboration. Who decides? You do. For the first time in history, every individual has the power to choose what money they want to adopt. This is what takes the most time for people to realize. Unlike any other point in time, no one can stop you from deciding where to store your hard-earned savings and what system to fuel. You can either choose to save in buckets with holes of various sizes, constantly draining the value of your savings to fund and reinforce a system where exploitation and perpetual wars remain rational choices. Or you can choose a bucket with no holes, one that gradually fills with more and more over time, where peace, fair competition, and mutual collaboration are the rational paths forward. The choice is not in the hands of the politicians. It is yours and no one else's. You know, there's something that I want to point out. Notice that the entire Western world, Europe, the US, they are all part of a singular monetary regime. Even with the respective currencies, they all have deep ties and they are all playing the exact same game through the IMF and the World Bank in getting benefit to the entire Western world by exploiting developing nations through loans. Like France is doing to a bunch of countries in Northern Africa exactly what we are doing to most of the world. And notice that the quote-unquote opposing countries, the Eastern countries, Russia, China, India, these countries are setting up their own monetary regime as a competitor to the dollar and Western regime. This is because of the island economics concept. Because the only way for them to compete with the West and not actually end up being subject to the exporting of the West's inflation is for them to try to come together to create a bloc that does the exact same thing in reverse. And without a monetary technology, without a money that can actually sustain its monetary rules in spite of a powerful economic or powerful external government actor. If you as a country do not do this yourself, then you are simply subjecting yourself to some other country doing it. That is it. And that's crazy to think about. That we're in a system where there is literally no escape. And the only action, the only path to take for every individual country is to either lock down their country in order to prevent capital flows so that they can enforce the monetary regime inside their country on their own population and import, or not import, but push inflation onto their own citizens, or to use military dominance to force it onto some other country. And understand, this is also in the nature of fiat in the fact that it is inherently trust dependent. It is literally a system of trust. This is where you get those things where somebody is like, oh, the dollar's backed by the military. What's funny is it kind of actually is. Not like it's backed by it in some sense that, oh, you're going to be able to go, you know, take your dollars and redeem whatever chunk of a tank somewhere that you're owed. But in fact, just the opposite is that those tanks and that military are going to ensure that you will still be stolen from and that you are going to be stuck eating the inflation as well as all of these other countries that are under the dominance of this military power. And thus, an artificial demand for a trusted token can be enforced through a military dominance, through an empire. Now, yes, this actually makes it very reliable as a currency because you know people are going to be trapped using it, and it is its demand is going to prevent it from suffering extreme devaluation because of the money printing, because of the trillions of dollars printed by the government in question, the United States. But that does not make it a trustworthy currency or a good money any more than chaining a girl up in your basement makes for a healthy relationship. Sure, you might have a solid reliability that they're still going to be in the basement, but that's not a relationship. And what's funny is the nature of how the money is created, even at the very base, actually stimulates and accelerates all of the problems that are caused, all of the dynamics that cause the consequences of the fiat monetary system. For example, talking about the relentless pursuit of growth caused by chronic inflation, well, when you create money out of thin air as debt, there is this desperate need. You know, let's say you have $1 million in savings and you want to make life better and you want to grow the economy. Well, you don't really need to do that. Therefore, you're going to engage in the thing that is of the highest value. You're going to use that $1 million in order to accomplish something that matters very deeply to you, or that you think is going to have the highest payoff far and away, or you're not going to waste the resources. However, if someone creates $1 million in debt, you have no choice. You have no choice. You have to pay back that $1 million. You are stuck. You are in panic mode. If you do not grow at all costs, no matter what it costs your competitor, no matter what it costs your family, no matter what it costs your society, you are going to grow because you will be destroyed. You will be ruined if you do not. We have done that on a societal level. Everyone is trapped in that situation because of how the money is created in the system. The nature of how it comes into existence causes that dynamic, which makes it worse and worse and compounds decade after decade, generation after generation, before it's just normalized to have no ethics, to compromise on everything, to make a buck, to do everything you can to get ahead, no matter who you have to run over or who you have to destroy in order to get what you are after. It alters what is acceptable as a way to interact with each other in society. And when people are stuck having to compromise their ideals or their principles or their values, it slowly makes them hate themselves. And I'll tell you, there are few people who are scarier than the people who hate themselves. There is a massive amount of evil in this world that is largely a consequence of self-hate and insecurity. But what's crazy about how the monetary system causes these dynamics is that, like, this is why we still, even with all the technology and the communication networks, even with all the pressure and attempts to make a truly global economy, we still don't have a global economy. We still have so much friction. We still have so many capital controls. We still have so many different countries at each other's throats. And this is because of the inherent friction between the different monetary systems, the inability to have exchange rates or fixed exchange rates and no common standard. The consequence or the power and dominance that comes with using some other country's standard and the conflicts that arise from that because someone feels subjugated because basically they are and there's not any way around it. And the fact that because every single individual system is still creating money out of thin air as debt, because everybody has adopted the fiat system, it means that everybody is in the same boat, desperately trying to figure out how to grow at all costs. And the best way, the easiest way to do it, to ensure that you can push growth, because basically if you don't do this, you're going to be subject to someone else doing it on the other side. If your neighbor tries to lower their interest rate to encourage more growth, they're going to pull capital from your country. Wait, no, I was right the first time. If they raise interest rate, they're going to get foreign investment. So they can basically gut your country and of resources. They can make your investment potential, your profile, less viable because of what they do with their independent monetary system, with their individual interest rate controls and price controls in their country. They can cause that problem, that imbalance to spill over to you, to specifically take it from you, so that even though your country might be the best thing to invest in from a genuine, like, realistic standpoint, when we're talking about the value of the resources and what the investments are, because of the artificially induced interest rate being changed to reflect not the reality of investment and value, the capital gets pulled to those other locations. So if you do not play the same game to counteract that, your country is screwed, and importantly, you're in debt too, because you're using a fiat system in which you create money out of thin air, and you have to grow. You don't have a choice, because you will default if you don't. This is why I've used the analogy in the past about how the fiat system forces you to, you can't pause, you can't stop, because you're creating more debt than, you're creating a situation where if you do not grow, if you are not moving fast, you crash. Like, it's very similar from a debt to a savings economy. It's very similar analogously to being on a bike versus standing up on your own two feet. Like, if you stop, if you slow down too much on a bike, you'll fall over. You can't stand still. You have to put your feet down. Because the only way you actually get balance, the only way you can actually maintain the momentum, is if you have that centripetal force keeping you upright with the wheels. That's what debt is. You have an interest that you have to pay. You have a burden that you have to get off of you, which means that if you are not being active, if you are not aggressively trying to grow as much as you can, you are screwed. You either run at 100 miles an hour or you're done. You have nothing. But from the context of savings, an equity-based economy that actually builds a monetary base, a surplus, and everyone has savings, means that everyone can pause for a second and nothing bad happens. There's no desperation in making sure that we just rip out some resources out of somewhere for something to make number go up. Think about the environmental consequences if you have no choice. Your entire society is in debt, and you just have to blast through this mountain and dig out every bit of iron ore or whatever the hell it is as fast as you can. Consequences be damned. Whatever this area used to be used for, or the beauty of nature, who cares? Not important. I am in debt. I need to move. We are doing that on a societal level. This is exactly why we have so much short-term thinking. This is exactly why we have so many externalities. It's not the market. It's a horrible monetary system and the rational results of its incentives being played out. And we can never actually have a real global economy, a balanced and prosperous global economy, until we have an independent, neutral, global money. The only possible route to a quote-unquote global economy in the former sense is for a total and complete military dominance of the entire world. We're talking about an IMF world order. That's the globalism they want, and that's the extension, that's the end game of a total control of the board in the fiat game. But when you are thinking, when you're talking about a system like that, you no longer are thinking about capital flows in and out, because you're talking about one global system, which means that capital flows will literally just be capital restrictions. This is also why you have to have a social credit score. This is also why they desperately need a CBDC, because you are no longer dealing with prices and capital flows going in and out of a country in order to manipulate or respond to the interest rate and respond to artificial pricing. But instead, you are talking about controlling everyone inside of the system itself, literally micromanaging everything that they can and do, how they invest and what they spend money on, as a necessity, because now you are forced, you have to have your quote-unquote local population, which is everybody because you're talking about dominating the whole world, your local population eat the inflation. There's no way to actually let it be exported. But under a Bitcoin standard, this disconnect goes away, and to get a global economy, all you have to do is wait for boundaries to fall. A global system with aligned incentives will naturally emerge everywhere. So when we are talking about the consequences and what it means to be on a Bitcoin standard, what it means to have a global neutral money, and one that is digital, no less, I mean, tech, it kind of would have to be. We're talking about rational incentive alignment for everyone on Earth. And I want to reiterate something that Peter said in this piece, is that this does not mean war goes away entirely. It does not mean authoritarianism. It does not mean oppression. Any of these things go away, because there will still be bad people. There will still be governments. However, over time, pressure against those things should build more and more, because those things are terrible for economies. They are not good economic. They do not create prosperity. North Korea is not a prosperous country. China is not a rich country. Slavery is not a good economic system. It is good for a single individual exploiting another single individual. But as a system, it produces dog shit. It produces nothing. It doesn't innovate. It is the lowest form of manual labor and the lowest form of quote-unquote management, to just beat someone into going through motions basically like a machine. Slavery is poverty. You know, this is something that I've talked about with people, and I was talking about with my brother actually just the other day, is that people literally think that, you know, America was born on the back of slavery, and it was like unfair, and America's wealth is built on slavery. And what's funny is that what those people reveal is that they actually believe slavery to be some great, powerful, awesome economic power. They literally hold it in high regard. They say it is bad, but they hold it as this great thing that has caused this immense wealth. So it's not actually totally irrational to realize, to find out that they also basically support the same thing. They invariably, somebody who holds that position 90% of the time is also some form of a socialist. They believe the government should basically enslave everybody in order to control everything, because that's how you obtain wealth. Their belief is actually that slavery is wealth, when the exact opposite is actually true. Slavery literally makes a country poor. In fact, one of the reasons the South lost the Civil War was because they were poorer. Slaves don't innovate. Slaves don't have incentives to care about and actually pay close attention to what they are doing. Slaves aren't worried about how to make it 10% better, 20% better tomorrow. You cannot beat someone into thinking up good ideas. All of American wealth was because of freedom and because of the incentive to own something, to care about it, and to be able to think freely about how you see to make your life better and how to improve the things that you do and learn the skills that matter to you and have the right to own that outcome and the consequences of that skills and the of those skills and the consequences of that ownership to be something that you own that is protected so that when you make that investment, you get the return. Your family and what you care about receive the benefit of the devotion and care that you put into life and the decisions that you make. That is where America's wealth came from, and it did not actually become great, powerful, and wealthy until slavery ended. Natural economic incentives and basic liberty and morality are perfectly aligned. They are one and the same. They are part of the same system. And that is how wealth is created. That is the origin of wealth. But the fiat system literally throws sand in the gears. It shifts some of those core incentives. Because of how the money is created, it traps us in a race and literally builds a zero-sum game inside of the positive-sum game that society naturally is. And when we talk about a Bitcoin standard, we are talking about solving that problem across the entire world. Now, if there actually was a solution to that, if you actually could align those incentives and you could fundamentally alter at the base layer, starting with how every individual relates to their own life, to their own money, and the very form of the economic relationship they have with all of the people around them, and that it could do this for every person on Earth, what do you suspect that thing would be worth? Just something to think about. All right. We'll close it out here. Thank you guys for listening. Shout out to Peter England for another fantastic article. Don't forget to check out the Jade Plus and your 10% discount with code GUY. And then the BitKit wallet if you're looking for a non-custodial, a sovereign Bitcoin and Lightning wallet that just works. That is BitKit. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to share it out with everybody you know. I love you all. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. The saddest aspect of life right now is that science gathers knowledge faster than society gathers wisdom. Isaac Asimov.